Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge, Text Number 34. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena stevaya upadekshanti te ganam jnaninas tatvadarshanaha. To strive to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively and render service unto him, the self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Purport. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following the principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam 6.3.19 says, Dharmam tu sakshad bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master, and when he sees a genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Not only one should hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshanaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthai Buddhaya Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvise Sarasvam Nivadi Paskatya De Sitarane. So here, the purpose of Krishna consciousness is explained that one has to get a clear understanding about what is Krishna consciousness. In other words, as it explains here, that it is a question of spiritual realization. That's why we come to Krishna consciousness, to realize what is spirit. Spirit, of course, is the individual soul, ourselves, and the Supreme Spirit. But Krishna says here, or it says here, that it's undoubtedly difficult. Therefore, one has to hear either directly from Krishna, as Arjuna was doing 5,000 years ago, or one has to hear from one who's heard from Krishna and is able to convey the knowledge as Krishna would convey it. In the Mahabharata says, Tarko apratishta shutiyavi vina, nasavari shiryashanad vina, that Tarko apratishta shutiyavi vina. In order to understand or obtain realization about something, simply arguments will not do. I may put forward my perceptions on something, and you may counter it with your perceptions or arguments on the same subject. So argumentation by argumentation, there's no progress actually in understanding something. Shrutayavibhina. Because the different scriptures are made for different classes of persons, therefore simply by hearing from scripture I may not be able to understand. And asavarishir yasyana bina, and even the great sages, they have their own level of understanding, and they may sometimes differ with each other. It is recommended, if one wants to understand the actual import of religion, dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam mahajno yena kata sapanta, that one has to hear from someone who has realization. But our ability to hear also depends upon our surrender. That unless one is surrendered, one will not be able to hear. One has to be receptive. And that surrender is explained here, that one has to approach the right person to receive the knowledge. In other words, we have to approach someone who has knowledge in order to receive knowledge. If one goes to a car mechanic, you get trained up how to become a heart surgeon, he may find it a little difficult to learn the science. But one has to go to a person who not only has theoretical knowledge, but has practically applied it. And that way one can actually be trained up in a practical way to utilize the knowledge. But the training, a certain attitude has to be there. If one goes to a teacher and he thinks that he knows more than the teacher, or if he has no faith in the teacher, which is about the same thing, then why will one not seriously listen? Similarly, if one has no intention to put the knowledge into practice, one will not take what he's hearing very seriously either. In other words, if one's not going to do something practical at the end of hearing, he'll might as well forget whatever he's heard, and therefore it's as good as not hearing anything. It's called one ear and out the other one. And if one has a preconceived idea what he wants to do, in other words, I'll only hear from him if it agrees with me, one will not hear either, or not hear very much. Or what is the value of such hearing? If I'm going to filter the hearing only if it agrees with my conceptions or what I want to do, then I might as well just listen to my own mind anyhow. If one wants to actually be benefited by receiving a higher consciousness or a higher realization, and it says here one has to take the attitude of hearing and the attitude of being a menial servant. Unfortunately, in the Western world, this has not been generally our training. As a matter of fact, our training is more or less diametrically opposed to this idea of becoming a menial servant. People are falsely given the impression that by their learning they can become the masters of the material world. But if one goes and sees people in general, they're anything but the masters of the material world. People on the street are not the masters of this material world. They're being kicked by material energy from one place to the next. That the only thing they can lord it over is a piece of bread that they go to the store to buy. And they can hardly make it to the store, most of them. Or they buy some... In other words, falsely people are being given the idea that they're actually going to become the laws of material nature, but old age, disease, and death are kicking them. The miseries of material existence are kicking them. Their anxieties and distorted emotions caused by overindulgence and sense gratification, irregular lives are kicking them. They're being kicked by the material nature, but still they have this idea of falsely in their minds that they're their lords. And when they hear that they should become menial servants, they become very disturbed. They think, I'm not going to become the master of, the servant of anyone. I'm free and independent. And they elect people who tell them that you're going to become free and independent. But at every moment, they're being pressured. They have to pay taxes, they have to pay the rent, they have to pay for the car, they have to satisfy their mother, send them a birthday card, they have to satisfy their children, they have to satisfy everyone. Every moment, they're working as a hands and legs tied up by their obligations, but just someone's giving them some false idea that they've become God or independent. Therefore, if one wants to become falsely independent, it is very hard to hear the conception of how one is actually dependent and subservient, and that that idea should be developed. Most courses at the university are not offered in how to become a good servant, how to become submissive. I don't think there are any courses at the university, especially nowadays, how to be a gentleman. Is there any courses of how to be a gentleman and observe the etiquette and how to become submissive and humble? There's no course like that at all. And even if there was, people would think it's completely impractical. But if one wants to receive real knowledge, that one has to become in the attitude of becoming submissive. And not only submissive, but with the idea of practically applying within one's life what one hears. And it can't be limited to only one's idea of what I'm going to do. That if they tell me to do something that I don't like, then I'll just reject it. Because then we won't be able to hear very well. And the idea of false prestige, we have to be willing to eliminate our false prestige because it's spiritual. If it's spiritual, it means that actually my connection with this body, which is based upon a false conception that I am the body and that I am the only proprietor of the body, that it is actually my body. But one has this idea that I have a very special body with very special qualities and it's me or it belongs to me. Then it's very difficult to hear about how I'm actually not this body. I'm not the independent doer of my activities. How there's another person who's actually the owner of the body, and I'm just who's a landlord, and I'm simply the tenant inhabiting the body and experiencing the body. Then this conception becomes very difficult if I want to maintain some false prestige. If I think, well, I'm very beautiful, or I'm very intelligent, or I have so many possessions, I come from such a nice place, that if one wants to maintain these conceptions, then it becomes very, very difficult to understand how actually I'm not this body. That I'm actually a spiritual being. And that I'm not actually the owner of this body, and that the body actually belongs to Krishna. Therefore, one has to not only become a menial servant of the spiritual master, but one also has to give up this idea of false prestige. And the basic idea should be satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master. In other words, although one may hear from the spiritual master about so many, or any devotee, anyone who's explaining spiritual knowledge, about how we're not this body, how the material nature works, etc., etc., but the ultimate goal is not simply to break everything down and analyze it and finally discover ourselves within this body and the mechanism of the machine. But beyond that is it's actually personalism. That is that I'm actually a loving servant. Because this idea that I'm going to work to please someone else is difficult for the spirit soul to conceive, to understand. That's called love. In the material concept of life, we say we love people, but actually what we mean is that we love people how they gratify our senses or our false ideas of who we think we are. We say we love our cat or a dog as long as our cat and dog gratify our senses. We love our country as long as it satisfies my idea of what a nice country is, etc., etc. I love my car as long as it works. So love in the material world is based upon our idea of sense gratification, but love in the spiritual world is actually based upon the idea of pleasing Krishna and his representatives. The fact is that if Krishna and his representatives are pleased, then the experience is spiritual. And if the representative and Krishna are not pleased, then our experience is spiritual, material. And how to understand the subject matter, how to get spiritual realization, here it explains, inquiries and submission constitute the proper accommodation for spiritual understanding. So, we hear something. Generally, it's very difficult for us to hear anything, although we think we're hearing. According to Bhaktivinoda Thakura, that hearing or understanding takes five different stages. When we perceive something, first, it enters into our mind and it's held there for some time. There's some impression. And then we have to search through our memory and see, more or less break down what we've just heard into its different components and try and see how it's similar to other things that we already know. Then we have to see how it fits into our previous experiences. After we've broken it down, then we fit it into our previous experiences, the things that we're familiar with. And then, after analyzing it, it stays within our memory, and with our intelligence we can analyze it, how to act according to it. Just like if we see a peacock, then the first thing we do is we just see an impression of a peacock and it's stored within our consciousness, within our mind. And then we analyze it and we see feathers and tail and whatever else. And then we come up with the idea as this peacock after relating it to other similar things like birds and blue things and etc. Then after seeing it as a peacock, we may remember that, you know, peacocks are in Vrindavan, Krishna likes peacocks, that peacocks make a certain sound, etc. So then it becomes differentiated. First it's analyzed and understood as a peacock, so it becomes one, fits into one category, and then it expands what we're seeing. It's related to other concepts that were already within our consciousness. And then it's stored within our intelligence as memory, and then we can analyze what to do. Now we've figured out it's a peacock. Now we can figure out what to do about it. So we may think, well, if I go near it, it might peck me, and maybe I should take a picture of it. It's, you know, Krishna, etc., etc. So now we can analyze what to do, the fact that it's a peacock. But if we didn't pay any attention to it in the first place, then we never would have noticed the peacock. And therefore, there was no question of the other breaking it down, finding out that it was a bird, that it's a special bird, it's a peacock, it has certain relationships with Krishna, with the material nature, etc. And then figuring out what to do. So certainly with any kind of knowledge, unless we first pay attention, then there's no question of trying to analyze what we hear. And unless we start analyzing what we hear, unless we have a background of information, and which you're related to, it's very difficult to break it down into different components in such a way as to actually store it within our remembrance. Or even if we can, it'll be the more information the more similarities it has to other information that we already have stored, the more meaningful it is, and the more likely it's going to be put into our memory, and the more we know how to act according to it. For instance, if there's some knowledge about the soul, if we don't know anything about the soul, then when we're hearing the knowledge about the soul, it's very hard to relate it to other information that we already have. If we've never heard about the soul before, then we have nothing to relate it to, and we have no experiences to relate it to or knowledge to relate it to, and therefore it's very hard to understand. Just like if one goes and tries to explain to a person who has no previous conceptions of the soul, tries to explain to him what a soul is, because he has no previous experience with it, it's very difficult to understand about it. Therefore, because he can't understand what you're talking about, there's no possibility of relating it to previous knowledge. Because he can't relate it to previous knowledge, therefore he can't put it into his memory, because he has nothing to connect it with. He doesn't understand what you're talking about. Therefore, there's no question of acting according to it, because he never understood in the first place what you talked about, what you were saying. Therefore, first one has to learn how to pay attention. Then one has to learn how to try to understand things or in relationship to one's past experience. Then if one can do that, then one has to gradually accumulate that understanding and act according to it, so it's actually experience or within his life. And so when new information comes, that it can be related to his experience. I don't know if it's completely clear. In other words, if we actually want to make progress in spiritual life, it's a question of utilizing our senses, our mind and our intelligence. Using our senses means that we have to pay attention to what we're hearing. Using our mind means that we have to properly try to break it down and analyze it and understand it. So things that we have, our misconceptions could be rejected and the right conception could be accepted. And then we have to learn how to put it into our memory so that we can utilize it for activities. So just like, for instance, Krishna says, Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hastini Shuni Chaiva Swapake Cha Pandita Samadarshanaha. So having that in our memory, then we can, when we see another living being, although we may not see directly, see within the heart a little being with the club, another little one next to him, but at least having that knowledge theoretically in our memory, then our other conceptions can be eliminated. That this person is male, this person's female, this person's black, and this person's white, and that's it. In other words, their reality is limited simply to my previous conceptions of what I think they are. That they're nothing more than a certain nationality, a certain sect, a certain sex, a certain age, so many different material designations. But this knowledge permits us to see beyond just our external sense perception and our previous conceptions of who people are according to what we've heard, and to give us a spiritual conception of things. That beyond our present perception, there's another person within this body known as the super soul, and he's accompanying all the living entities who are actually souls within bodies. Therefore, hearing this, if that's within our memory, then our understanding of what to do changes. If one thinks that this person is a material designation, then one will have a certain understanding of what to do, what his purpose is. And if one thinks that this person is a spiritual being and that there's another supreme being within them, known as the super soul, then one's understanding and motivations will also change. And by acting according to that vision, one gets a different result. In other words, if one acts according to a materialistic understanding, then he'll get a material result. And if one acts according to spiritual understanding, he'll get a spiritual result. So to have the knowledge within our consciousness is advantageous. Otherwise, there's no otherwise we won't, unless it's within our remembrance, spiritual knowledge, then we can't act spiritually, because we won't, that won't be one of the options. Therefore, it says, first of all, one has to be inquisitive how to spiritualize our consciousness. And one has to be submissive in order to learn how to do it. So it says inquiries and submission. In other words, one should want to become spiritual or spiritualize one's consciousness, spiritualize one's existence, and one must be submissive in order to do it. Constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. So just by being submissive, wanting to do it, inquisitive, wanting to become, to gain spiritual realization, spiritual understanding, and being inquisitive to do it, or submissive to do it, hearing from the right person, but unless we follow through with what's being said, then it won't be effective. If my desire is not very strong, I say, well, I'm really interested and finding out how to become spiritual. And then they tell me. And I listen, even if I listen submissively, but if I don't want to do anything on that basis. Just like if someone says that everyone is a spiritual being and that you should, one of the easy ways of realizing that is to go out and meet people by distributing books. So if I think that's too hard, that I'm not going to actually go out and meet anyone, I really like to understand it. It sounds exciting to see everyone as a spiritual spark. And I've heard it, and I really believe this person means it, but it's too much for me. Maybe next lifetime. Then, although I've heard it, and I really want to understand it, and I try and analyze it, theoretically I believe it, but I won't do anything about it. Therefore, I don't really make any advancement. And then it says, one must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. When he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. Because, as it says in the next line, in this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. That one should get a clear understanding from him in submission, service, and inquiries. So the spiritual master knows, or one who has spiritual understanding, that why should I waste my time telling someone something that he's not going to listen to? If I'm going to give him an instruction and he's not really serious about acting on it, then why bother giving it? If the person is not submissive, he's not going to listen. Or even if he is submissive, but he doesn't have the capacity to understand, or even if he is submissive, but he's not really, doesn't have very much capacity to understand. And if he's not willing to act according, even if he had a capacity to understand, and he was submissive, but he wouldn't be willing to act according to it, then it would be detrimental to give instructions. On the other hand, if the person is actually interested in getting the knowledge, and he's actually listening submissively, he's accepting someone as an authority, and he's actually acting according to it, then the spiritual master will give him the correct knowledge. Because then it will be advantageous to both deliver the knowledge and to receive it. Otherwise, if he receives the correct knowledge, but he's not submissive, or he receives spiritual knowledge, but he's neither submissive or inquisitive or ready to act according to it, then both the knowledge will be wasted. The person will become offensive because he towards the knowledge, and the spiritual master will also, because he's not delivered the knowledge to the right person, who might misuse it, therefore he becomes implicated. Therefore it says here that if the person actually is understanding the knowledge, or as it says here, the spiritual master, that if he really wants to get the knowledge, he has to be both submissive and make the proper inquiries and render service. And when he does that, when he's shown he has the proper attitude and will exhibit the proper behavior, then he gets the proper knowledge. Otherwise, it says, blind following absurd inquiries to condemn. If one has some other idea other than practical application of Krishna consciousness in his life, if he's asking questions, for instance, but he has some other intention other than applying it within his life in Krishna consciousness, he's just wasting people's times, or he's just asking about things that are absurd, or he's just blindly following. He has no real intention of trying to understand anything very deeply. Then these things are not encouraged. What is encouraged is that the real aim is to get a clear understanding, that everything becomes clear, and that one knows exactly what to do and knows why he's doing it and knows how to do things. But it says the bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive, is always ready to render service, then the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. So if one develops the proper submissiveness, humility to be receptive, at the same time is ready to act according to what one has heard in an intelligent way, then the inspiration or the aspiration to become Krishna conscious and to realize the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is reciprocated both by Krishna and the spiritual master. In other words, when the spiritual master sees a genuine disciple, he gives clear directions by which one can make spiritual advancement. And when Krishna sees the intention of the devotee to act according to that knowledge, then he enlightens the devotee within and gives him genuine spiritual realization. So we'll stop there. Thank you. Are there any questions?
Yes.
I never understood that there are three stages of devotees. The highest Uttama Adhikaras, they don't see the need of preaching when they see everybody already as spiritual beings. And I don't understand, but they are topmost devotees in Christian sense, and also preach the most deeply. So why is that?
Well, obviously, it's not very easy. Unless you're on that platform, we can only understand it to some extent. If you come back after you become an Uttama Adhikari, it probably become a lot clearer. But just like if you see someone superior to you, say you're a spiritual master, if you see him engaged in doing service, you generally don't go over and start preaching to him. Is that right? Because you see that he's actually superior to you in what he's doing. Similarly, the Uttama Adhikari, he sees that everyone is actually surrendered to Krishna, either directly or indirectly, except for him. Because he sees only Krishna. He sees the universal form of Krishna. He sees everything in relationship to Krishna. He sees that everyone is acting one way, either directly or indirectly, following Krishna's directions. He thinks everyone is actually serving Krishna except for him. Now, it's not that necessarily he sees that everyone is on the same level. He doesn't necessarily see that everyone is equally advanced, but he sees that everyone is more or less more advanced than he is in serving Krishna. Is that clear?
Well, for example, he walks in the street
Well, for him, there's no such thing as sin or pious activity. He just sees that they're serving Krishna somehow or another. But, because obviously, if he does see a need to preach, then he comes down to the second class platform and discriminates according to that platform.
Why is it in the second class platform?
It's not that he doesn't see that these people, you know, are engaged in sinful activity, but he thinks that they're better than he is. So he can't see what any reason to preach to them because he thinks he's more fallen than they are. Yeah, otherwise he has to, because otherwise how can you preach? If you think that everyone's more advanced than you are, then how can you preach? In any case, we usually don't have that problem trying to figure out, what should I go down to the second class platform? How can I understand how I can come to the platform of preaching? Because all I see is everyone more advanced than I am. We're generally trying to go up from the third class platform. In any case, because if someone is on that platform, he has so much love for everyone, for Krishna and for everything and everyone related to Krishna. Therefore, love is blind. He doesn't see the faults so much. He only sees their good qualities. Just like if you go on book distribution, the person's walking down the street, you know, he may be a butcher. But you stop him, and you say, take this book, and he says, oh, that looks like a nice book. You start thinking, this person's pretty advanced. Isn't that right? And if he gives you a nice donation, he takes out, you know, 100 guilders and gives it to you, you think he's practically pure devotee. You overlook the fact that he's a butcher. So a person who's on the Uttama Adhikari platform, because he loves everyone, you know, he only sees the good qualities in them. He overlooks all the bad qualities they have. And he sees only the bad qualities in himself, and he overlooks, even if he doesn't have any, he sees them, and he overlooks all his good qualities. Therefore, when he compares himself to others, he thinks, how can I preach to this person? He's so nice compared to me. So he doesn't break down, everyone start analyzing what their activities are. And if he does, he thinks, well, you know, he's actually a spiritual soul, he's actually a nice person, etc., etc. Therefore, although he may see that there's something wrong, he doesn't see that he should preach to them. Yes.
According to this Prabhupada Maharaj, we see that the spiritual master needs to be self-realized, or just following in the footsteps of someone is self-realized.
Well, according to this purport, I don't think it mentions that.
The self-realization of the spiritual master.
Yeah, well, it doesn't mention, in other words, it doesn't mention the way you just analyzed it. But generally the qualification of the spiritual master, as far as self-realized, does he have to be talking directly to Krishna, you know, Krishna with a flute, actually establishing Goloka Vrindavan? Not necessarily. It says that he has to be self-realized. So self-realized means he has to at least understand who he is. And he has to do his duty. Prabhupada generally would say that the essential qualification of a spiritual master is that he's just like a postman. He delivers the letter to you. He may not have written the letter. He doesn't, but his main qualification is he doesn't open up the letter and change it. He just delivers to you as he received it. So that's the most essential qualification of the spiritual master. He delivers the knowledge as he received it. So within that implies that he accepts the knowledge also. Otherwise, because he's not adding anything and he's not subtracting anything, he has faith that the message is the correct message. And that's his duty. Now, as far as his depth of realization, that knowledge, you know, that has to be, that's his essential qualification. Obviously, the more he's realized knowledge, the more effective he will be in delivering the knowledge. But as far as, just like, for instance, someone may be a very good postman, he may get the mail on time, he may put in the, you know, but as long as he does his job, he's a postman. Well, the super soul is one who enlightens you from within. In terms of that. No, the super soul does. But the super soul, his external representative, the spiritual master, gives you the knowledge. And if you take that knowledge, then Krishna from within, if you accept the knowledge that he's giving you, because actually the spiritual master is non-different from the super soul. The super soul is acting from without, and he's giving you information. And if you accept the information, then the super soul within enlightens you with that knowledge. Well, it can be completely blind. If he says, go get me a glass of water, and you just get a glass of water, well, that's all right. If he says, go and distribute books, generally you have to analyze a little bit more. You know, where am I going to distribute the books? How many hours am I going to do it? Not that you immediately pick up a book bag and you go out and you distribute books, and 3 weeks later you call them up and you say, can I get something to eat also? Well, I haven't eaten anything for 3 weeks. I haven't taken a bath, I haven't taken any rest, I'm just following your instruction. A certain amount of analyzation is naturally there. And generally our, you know, method of following is acceptable both to ourselves and to the authorities. So we don't really question whether it's blind or not. But if it was completely blind, then people would actually question, what are you doing? Do you understand what I'm talking about? Well, if we are following blindly, then we won't get very much of a result. Because that's what we're doing. He tells me to do something, I don't think about it. I just say, yes. Yes, Guruji, and I just go out and do it. I don't know. I don't think about why I'm doing it. It's called Niyamagraha. I don't think about why I'm doing it. I don't think about what the consequences of what I'm doing. The fearless leader has told me to do it, and therefore I do it. So that's good in one sense, but I may wind up doing the wrong thing also, because I haven't really understood what he's telling me to do. I may wind up not really doing what he told me to do because I didn't really understand it. So sometimes it's all right, because after a while we'll get some experience and we may think about it and understand what he's talking about. So it's not that we have to sit there, and if he says, give me a glass of water, you say, well, what temperature? And he says, how big a glass? Should it be maha water or tap water? Etc. So we don't have to analyze most things to such detail that it becomes a source of annoyance. You know, that's not exact. You know, I have to understand every detail of the instruction. But at the same time, it shouldn't be so blind that I don't understand exactly anything that he's talking about. I just follow according to my own interpretation of it. But most of the things that are told to us are pretty clear. And when the instruction is carried out, it's confirmed that it was what he was talking about. And therefore we don't feel so insecure about things that are obvious, that we have to get every detail analyzed about it. But after some time, when something is told to us that does require some analyzation, then we have to actually be prepared to analyze it and to do something beyond just what our superficial understanding would immediately give us, tell us to do. But at the same time, it shouldn't be so blind that I don't understand exactly anything that he's talking about. I just follow according to my own interpretation of it. So, but most of the things that are told to us are pretty clear. And when the instruction is carried out, it's confirmed that it was what he was talking about. And therefore we don't feel so insecure about things that are obvious, that we have to get every detail analyzed about it. But after some time, when something is told to us that does require some analyzation, then we have to actually be prepared to analyze it and to do something beyond just what our superficial understanding would immediately give us, tell us to do. Yes.
Realize how everything which happens during the day is arranged by the spiritual master, and sometimes when our consciousness wants to look and we meet a person, and how is that person, the spiritual master will act into that person.
Really? Well, maybe Krishna, maybe in some way, if you're actually surrendered to the spiritual master, then you know, the spiritual master being Krishna's instrument, if you're always following his instructions, then you can say everything is arranged by the spiritual master. But as far as the spiritual master being the position of God and controlling everything, I don't think that's the position the spiritual master is generally put in. He's not God. He's not the all-pervading super soul. He's the savior, Bhagavan. He's a servant of Krishna. But he's not, you know, someone comes along and, you know, gives us a big donation. If we start thinking, well, my spiritual master sent him. And so the next person comes along and starts screaming at us, and they say, my spiritual master sent him. You know, to give the credit or the blame on the spiritual master is not really, you know, his position. On the other hand, he can give his instructions how to act in different circumstances. And he can tell us how Krishna's and our past activities are the cause of different things. But as far as putting all the, you know, making him the cause of all causes, that's not exactly our philosophy. He has his part to play in the development of one's spiritual life. But that doesn't make him the all-pervading super soul.
But for example, so like in the biblical industry, you pray to the spiritual master, like you pray to Krishna.
Well, that's praying through the spiritual master to Krishna. We're approaching the spiritual master to be act as our representative through the super succession, so that Krishna can, you know, bless us in some way. But the spiritual master should not be seen independently of Krishna in that sense. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande. Prabhupada ki jai.